Figuring out the right way to talk about climate change can be tricky. It's a complicated topic, and for a person of faith, a belief in climate change is often painted as being incompatible with religion. But our next guest says the two don't have to be opposed, and she says we can all do a better job of talking about the issue with friends and family. Catherine Hayhoe is a climate scientist and director of Texas Tech University's Climate Science Center. She recently paid a visit to UW-Eau Claire and UW-Madison. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You were in Wisconsin this week talking about religion and climate change. How does your personal faith fit in with your belief in climate change and your efforts to combat it?
Well, often when I'm asked, do you believe in climate change? That's one of my favorite questions, because my answer to that is actually no. As a scientist, I look at the data, and the data is very clear that climate is changing and humans are responsible and the impacts are serious. But then the question is, what do we do about this? How do we respond to the facts and the information that science gives us? That's where our values come in. And for the vast majority of us here in the US as well as around the world, our values are often informed by our faith.
Why do you think that there is this narrative, especially here in the United States, that you can't be a person of faith and be a believer in climate change or know that climate change is a thing?
Mm-hmm. It's because many people have a vested interest in maintaining what's called the conflict model between science and faith. Now, this conflict model goes back a long time. It is fed by issues of origin and the age of the universe, people like Richard Dawkins on one side and Answers in Genesis on the other. And that's what we talked about this week at Upper House. But there's people who have a vested interest in convincing people that climate change is a religion, that you have to choose between your faith and the science. Because if people already have a belief or a faith that they are very happy with and that is a big part of their identity, as it is mine, then we don't want to believe in a new or a false religion. And so if they can paint climate change as a religion or a belief system, then anybody who already has a religion or a belief system that they don't want to change is going to reject climate change. And that's really what a lot of people want us to do, because people don't want us to fix it. And when I say people, I predominantly mean those who have the balance of power and wealth in this world, which depends on us continuing to burn fossil fuels as our primary source of energy.
You wrote a book, Catherine, about this with your husband called A Climate for Change, Global Warming Facts for Faith-Based Decisions. Why was it important to have something geared specifically to the faith community?
Well, I would have preferred to be able to just find a resource I could give to people. But when I looked, I couldn't find anything that started where the people that I was having the conversations with were at. A book or a resource that got into, well, how do we really know that it isn't a natural cycle this time? Because we know it's been natural cycles before. How do we know that if God is in control, humans could change something as big as our planet? Even questions like, if people believe the world is going to end anyways, why should we worry about what's happening today? We couldn't find a resource that really tackled all of these very common questions that we were hearing all the time. So that is why we wrote our book together. And that's also why I host a PBS series on YouTube called Global Weirding. It's about 35 super short videos so far. We're currently in season 3. And each of these short Global Weirding videos tackles a common question that we get. And I'll tell you, the fascinating thing is, these videos look at science questions, look at impact questions, it explains what's the big deal with 2 degrees and is it too late to fix climate change. But the episode that has the most views of any of our episodes is the one called The Bible Doesn't Talk About Climate Change, Does It?
And Catherine, it seems to me that there are actually some of the effects of climate change that we are seeing now or will see in the future that are really so closely related to the values of many people of faith. Do you actually see this as an opportunity?
Yes, I completely agree with you, because the reason why I care is because climate change disproportionately affects people who are poor and vulnerable, people who are already suffering today from hunger, poverty, disease, lack of access to clean water, even political instability and refugee crises. And these are the very people that we as Christians are told to care for, the poor, the orphans, the widowed, the people who don't have the resources that we do. So to me, there's a direct connection between my faith, my values, and why I care about the impacts of a changing climate that science describes to us in so much detail.
Catherine Hayhoe is a climate scientist and director of Texas Tech University's Climate Science Center. She recently paid a visit to UW-Eau Claire and UW-Madison and spoke about the intersection of being a person of faith and someone committed to combating climate change. And as we said, there is this concept or this understanding among some people that you can't be both. You can't be a person of faith. You can't be someone who is active in saying climate change exists. It's something we need to address. You are in both circles all the time. Catherine, what have you found personally effective in talking to both of those groups who, let's say, don't often overlap?
Well, we think they don't often overlap. But what is fascinating is that when Elaine Eklund is a sociologist who surveyed 1,700 scientists at top research universities around the U.S. to actually explore this question, because she thought, we always say, oh, those scientists are all atheists, but is that true? She found that 50% of scientists at top research universities in the U.S. identify with a very specific religious label. They would say, I am Christian, or I am Hindu, or I am Muslim. And then 70% of scientists would identify themselves as spiritual people, believing that there is more to our existence and more to life than simply what we can see and observe with our scientific tools. So that really breaks some stereotypes about who and what scientists are. And that, I think, is part of the key to the discussion, because we so often see science and faith as completely different things, which they are very different, but which have nothing to do with each other. And with the issue I study, climate change, it is such a difficult, thorny, challenging issue that we need all the science we can get to explain why it's happening, what impact it's having on us and our planet, and what are the outcomes of the choices that we can make. But then we desperately need our values, which again, for many of us, are informed by our faith, to say, how can we fix this?
And you felt so strongly about the issue of climate change that you really, in some ways, changed the focus of your career to address it. That's a big decision to make.
Yes, I was planning to be an astrophysicist. I love the idea that using nothing more than our brains and the scientific instruments that we can build on this relatively insignificant planet, that we can study the other side of the universe. We can look back in time at galaxy formation and supernova explosions. And so I was planning to pursue astrophysics as a career when I needed an extra course to finish my undergraduate degree. And I looked around and I saw this interesting course in climate science. And I thought, well, that, you know, I know climate change is real. I don't know much else about it. So, you know, might as well take this course. And that was when I was completely shocked to learn that climate change was not only an environmental issue like air pollution or deforestation, but it was a threat multiplier. It is a humanitarian issue. It is an economic issue. It's a human issue. It affects almost every aspect of our life on this planet. And so I thought to myself, well, With the abilities that I have, how can I not study this profoundly challenging issue? Because, as I said, it is disproportionately affecting the poorest and most vulnerable people on the planet who do not have a voice in many cases to stand up and say, we can't survive if this continues.
So you are a Christian who is a scientist. You are a scientist who is a Christian. Which of those circles have you felt maybe a harder time being your whole self in? Is it in being among other people of faith who might not see that climate change activism and science is compatible with Christianity, or is it on that other side?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I first wrote the book with my husband, who is a pastor, I had bought into the stereotype that many of us have, that scientists are predominantly atheist. And so I thought that the biggest pushback was going to come from my colleagues, to the point where I was actually seriously concerned that I might be flushing my career down the toilet by publishing a book saying that I was a Christian and that climate change was real. But I have to say, I was completely humbled to realize that it is exactly the opposite. I've received so much support and encouragement from my colleagues across the scientific community, from some who share my faith, from others who do not, but who all recognize that to fix climate change, we need everybody on board. In contrast, I am very sorry to say that I have received enormous amount of pushback from the Christian community, from people who say, oh, you can't be a real Christian, to people who say, oh, you're the whore of Babylon, to people who say, you're spreading Satan's lies. And I would say, in terms of collecting all of the negative feedback that I get, and I probably get two or three or four people a day at this point, so we've had, you know, a few years of negative feedback, I would say it's about 999 to 1 in terms of negative feedback from people in the Christian community versus in the scientific community, which is absolutely terrible. I mean, it just breaks my heart.
Catherine Hayhoe is a climate scientist and director of Texas Tech University's Climate Science Center. We're talking with her about the intersection of faith and climate change and the issue more broadly as well. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How do you talk about climate change with family and friends? Or do you avoid the topic because it seems too political? If you're a person of faith, how does your faith influence your thoughts on climate change? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation here on Central Time after this short break. Stay with us. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our conversation about faith and climate change. Catherine Hayhoe is with us, climate scientist and director of Texas Tech University's Climate Science Center. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What have your experiences been like talking about climate change with people in your life? If you talk about it regularly, have you hit any stumbling blocks? And if you don't, what are some of the things that hold you back? What questions do you have for Catherine on how to make the issue a bigger part of your everyday conversations? Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Catherine, so you said that you have gotten a lot more pushback from people in the faith community than you have from people in the scientific community. So how do you have conversations with fellow people of faith about this issue?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because what I've discovered is that, first of all, if there really is zero mutual respect, then it's really impossible to have a constructive conversation. But if we are able to connect with people over something that we do agree on, a value that we share, an interest that we have in common, a faith that we're both part of, something as simple as the fact that we're both parents, or we're really into planting, you know, plants in our backyards for butterflies, or we enjoy birding or ice fishing, or we go to a similar church. If we are able to connect, first of all, on what we agree on rather than what we disagree, because so often we tend to begin the conversation about climate change about what we disagree on, start with something we agree on, connect the dots. Two, if we're both this type of person, then we already care about climate change. We might not know it. And then talk about solutions that are consistent and compatible with people's values. And I have a TED Talk that just came out in December that's called "The Most Important Thing You Can Do About Climate Change is Talk About It." And I go through and I give a couple of different examples of different ways that we can connect with people and start some positive, constructive conversations that actually end in a better place rather than a worse one.
And we'll make sure that a link to that TED Talk is up at WPR.org/Central Time so people can see that. Let's go to the phones, and John in Mount Horeb is up. Hi, John.
Hey there. It's a really interesting conversation. It's very pertinent to our times, that's for sure. I'm just a recently became a dad. I have a 1.5-year-old boy at home, and that's kind of brought all this stuff amplified into my daily thoughts. But I find it very daunting that a lot of people that, you know, they live a religious lifestyle, or they preach and they, you know, practice all that they you know, learn in church and whatnot, that they would think that this is all a hoax. But it's, you know, if God does exist and he made this planet, then you would think that they would want to try to keep it as pristine as possible and try to protect it. It's just kind of, it's such a contradictory idea. And it just blows my mind every time I hear people that are very, very religious thinking that the idea of global warming and climate change is a hoax.
Thank you for that, John.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting point, Catherine. Is that something that you've actually used in talking with people?
Yes. Well, John, I completely agree with you. And sometimes I just feel like saying to people, have you not even read the Bible? But that's actually part of the clue. Because sadly today, for many people, Their statement of faith, so to speak, is written first by their political ideology and only a distant second by the Bible. So when I speak to people who are fellow Christians, I sort of see what I do as more like holding up a mirror and trying to remind them of who they really are. If you really say that you take the Bible seriously, well, this is what the Bible says. It says God gave humans responsibility over every living thing on this planet. And it talks about the fact that we are to care for others, especially people who do not have the resources we do, who are suffering and today are disproportionately affected by a changing climate. So John is absolutely right. People are not actually living up what they say they believe in. And that is actually a great conversation that we can have.
Thanks for that call. Let's go back to the phones. And Nate in Wanakee is up. Hi, Nate.
Yeah, thanks. Great program. Wonderful.
Thank you.
I want to ask a couple questions, but in light of what you just said, I think one of the points that the faith community is not perceiving is that they're in danger of undermining their credibility to the point that they are becoming idolatrous, in that they adhere more to a political value than they do to the concept of an almighty God. Now, here's my questions. I think you've answered one.
Go ahead.
But I wondered mm-hmm. if you would indicate what the primary pushbacks are that you get from the religious community.
All right. And Catherine, when you get that pushback, what are they focusing on?
Well, first of all, I agree with what you said. And second of all, I appreciate the question because I want to point out something really important that I've learned. When I talk with people, when all of us talk with people about climate change, we often hear either sciencey sounding objections or religiously sounding objections. Now, I don't say scientific or religious. I say sciencey sounding or religious-y sounding, because when you actually start to dig into the science or what we actually believe as Christians, we find out these arguments have no legs. So examples are, it's just a natural cycle. If God is in control, how could humans affect something as big as this planet? It's just a tiny bit of carbon dioxide. How could it affect something as large as our planet? Or the world's going to end anyways, or the Bible said there will always be seasons. So our Global Weirding episode on YouTube called What Does the Bible Say About Climate Change? It actually talks about a lot of these religious-y sounding objections. But what I've found having these conversations is that within 30 to 60 seconds, sometimes even in the same sentence, people will immediately pivot 90 degrees to their real objection, which has nothing to do with science and nothing to do with theology. It has everything to do with politics, ideology, and solutions. It will ruin the economy, they say. It would require a big government to fix it. It will let China take over what the US is doing. The objections are all solution-based. We don't believe there is any way that we can fix this thing without ruining the economy, let China rule the world, and pulling the plug on all of the energy that we use today. So that's why talking solutions is so important. People don't realize that there's more jobs in the solar energy industry today than in the coal industry across the whole U.S. Here in Texas, we have over 30,000 jobs in wind and solar alone. Around the world, we are already over 20% of our electricity is being generated by renewable sources. And 70% of all new electricity is renewable as well. And this is growing local jobs, investing in local economies. And it's actually creating economic booms, especially in rural areas that don't have a lot of other alternatives. So talking solutions is really important, and it can get past some of these objections, which, again, are mostly to do with solutions, with kind of an icing or a smoke screen of theological sounding or scientific sounding arguments on top.
Thanks for that call, Nate. And I'm sorry we don't have time to take the second part of your question, because Catherine, I want to make sure that we get some very concrete suggestions from you. So we're getting together with family or friends. We may or may not know what their positions are on climate change. We may or may not know actually what their specific faith beliefs are. How do you address this? I mean, I'm guessing you feel so strongly about this issue that you don't wait for it to just kind of naturally come up.
Well, I think having it naturally come up is a good thing. But what I do is look for points in our conversation or points of connection where it actually is natural to bring climate change into the discussion. So if we're talking about the economy, it's natural to bring in how, you know, the job benefits of renewable energy, or the fact that China is beating the pants off the U.S. when it comes to the amount of clean energy that they've got installed. When we're talking about our kids, it's natural to bring in the issues of, you know, air quality and our kids' health. And what about all those kids who are striking for climate, you know, taking Fridays off school? What do you think about that? So there's many ways that we can actually bring it into the conversation. But the best place to start is with something that we genuinely care about, that really matters to us, that also matters to the person or people we're talking to. So then we have this point of connection to walk together into the discussion on climate change, rather than starting the discussion from something that we most disagree on, or just dropping climate change kind of like a dead fish into the middle of the conversation, which really kind of ensures that it never goes anywhere.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us. So much more to talk about, but we're just out of time.
Thank you.
That was Catherine Hayhoe, climate scientist and director of Texas Tech University's Climate Science Center. She was with us today after her visit to two UW campuses in Madison and Eau Claire this week to talk about faith and climate change. Coming up Monday on Central Time, similar to what we just spoke about, for many of the people leaving Central American countries like Guatemala to migrate north, climate change is tied to their decision in one way or another. We talk with a reporter about how changing climate conditions are driving immigration into the United States. And we'll also take a look at some recent exciting science news with Bill Andrews. He's from Discover Magazine. All that and much more coming up Monday here on Central Time.